I'm Daniel Vitalis of DanielVitalis.com, and you are listening to the Rewild Yourself podcast, a show dedicated to transcending human domestication, activating our invincible genetic health, and uncovering our true potential. In each episode, we explore the many aspects of the rewilding lifestyle for better health, fitness, and a more rich and fulfilling life. Rewild yourself. Engage your biology. Rewild Yourself is brought to you by SurThrival.com. Jumpstart your evolution at SurThrival. Traditional medicines engineered as modern-day life hacks to support immunity, regulate hormones, boost libido, and enhance your peak physical performance. All traits of our wild ancestors. Recover, reformat, rebuild, rewild at SurThrival.com. Hey, are you ready to develop a lifelong rewilding approach you can feel confident about? Are you tired of struggling to sort through endless diet crazes, fitness fads, and constant scientific revisions? Join me October 11th through the 16th of 2015 in Rhinebeck, New York for my elementary school program. No, not like the elementary school we were put through as children. This is about learning to work with the four elements as a foundation for crafting and perfecting your personalized rewilding lifestyle strategy. You'll learn and anchor in seven practices that are crucial to a well-adapted life in our modern world. We'll be exploring movement and sleep, meditation and diet, water and air, sunlight, as well as a myriad of other ideas, tactics, and techniques for evolving your current way of life. This will be an intimate five-day event at the campus of the Omega Wellness Center where you, myself, and a community of other rewilders will be laying the foundations for lifelong vibrant living. Go to DanielVitalis.com, click on About, and then Coming Events to get more details. Well, I've got another great show lined up for you today. But before I get to that, I just want to say thanks to everybody for using the Naked Suntime hashtag. And actually, you may hear some birds chirping in the background. I am outside right now getting my naked suntime, so I guess the only thing I'm wearing is this microphone as I record this. Now, the reason that I keep promoting that, if it seems weird to people, like, what's with this guy and always trying to get everybody naked? Well, there's more to it than just my nudity proclivity. It would be that there are so many benefits to getting sun exposure on our skin. And there's so many ways that our culture just keeps us from that, like constantly, right? We're spending so much time indoors and nobody's forcing us to. It's just becoming less and less convenient to really spend time in nature, really spend time outdoors. And when we do, we tend to be moving quickly from some indoor location to some other indoor location. And even when we're not doing that, we tend to be encumbered by so much clothing that we just don't get the sun exposure we used to. And we know we need it. We know we need it for vitamin D. We know we need it for optimizing our hormone levels. This is so important. If you didn't get a chance to hear Nadine Artemis on sun exposure just a few weeks back on the show, I really recommend you go listen to that one because she really lays out the importance of full sun exposure. So thank you to everybody who's been vulnerable and daring and bold enough to post pictures of yourself getting your naked sun time. And for those of you who haven't seen these images, check out that hashtag again. It's Naked Sun Time. Okay, great show today. Intimate show, heartfelt show with Erwan Lacour. You guys might remember Erwan from his first visit on the show. This was early in when I first started the podcast, and he came on to talk about natural movement and about MoveNat, the system that he developed of natural movement. At the time, I didn't really know Erwan. That was the first time we spoke. Since then, I've actually gone out to not only hang out with him, but to study under him and actually get certified in level 1, 2, and combatives as a MoveNat coach, which was a great opportunity for me to deepen my own movement practice. I also want to just give a quick shout out to my sister Chloe, who went out recently and got certified in MoveNat as well, so she's now also a MoveNat coach. And I just think that's a great opportunity for anybody who's already teaching movement or people who want to get into movement as a career path. And for those of you who just like exposure into the world of MoveNat, get out to one of their introductory classes. I think you're really going to enjoy it. Now, if you're not familiar with Erwan, I recommend you go over to YouTube, maybe pause this recording now,
go over there and check out the video called The Workout the World Forgot, because I'd love for you to have a little context as we go into this talk so you can see how Erwan moves physically when he's in nature. This interview goes much beyond Erwan's movement practice, and in fact, it's a much more intimate look into his life and into his world. I'm always super interested in the backstory of how somebody got to the place where they're out in the world sharing a message, and so Erwan gives us some insight into that, and then we kind of push forward into where he's at personally in his life now. Obviously, he's anchored in these movement practices, and that's why he's able to teach them, but of course, his own personal evolution doesn't end there, and so here he shares a lot about his life as a father, his life on the medicine path, which I think is a really interesting topic that a lot of us are very interested in. And also about his spiritual life. And I find myself throughout the call really resonating with him. In fact, you'll hear me get more and more sort of excited, and you'll hear my kind of heart open more and more as we move through the conversation, because I feel so much resonance with this person and with his mission. I think all of you listening share at some level this same mission, or else you probably wouldn't be here listening to these interviews, listening to this podcast. So I think there's inspiration here for all of us. So I think you're really going to enjoy this interview with Erwan LaCour. Erwan LaCour is the founder of MoveNat, a synthesis of his long-term passion for real-world physical competency, his love of movement and nature, his extensive knowledge of physical education history, and his personal philosophy of life. He believes it's everyone's universal and biological birthright to be strong, healthy, happy, and free. He calls this state of being our true nature. His background includes a black belt in karate, 7 years of combat vital training, sailing, Olympic weightlifting, rock climbing, long distance triathlon, trail running, Brazilian jiu-jitsu, and several forgotten training methods such as George Herbert's Method Naturel. Find Erwan at MoveNat, MoveNat.com. And we've had Erwan on the show once before. Since then, I've gotten to know him a little bit better and actually got to train in MoveNat as a level one and level two certified trainer. So I've got a much better handle now on what Erwan's up to, what he's built out, what he's brought out to the world. And I got to tell you, this is some really amazing stuff. So it's awesome to have him back on the show. Erwan, thank you so much for coming back on.
Hi, brother. Hi, Daniel. Very happy to be back.
Yeah, man. It's super good to connect with you again. And I have to say, I had such a good time coming out and training with you guys in Houston. That was amazing. And just wanted to let you know, since then, my sister actually has become a MoveNat trainer as well. So she just did a certification up in, I believe, in Washington. And she's been really active with it as well. So that's really cool to see that happen. And so thanks for everything you brought, I guess, to my family in general.
Well, that's really great to hear. That makes my day. I love to hear all that. It's just good energy.
Yeah, it's so great to hear. And I feel like, you know, in my own life, I know as, you know, we're out there kind of doing our thing, bringing our message to the world. And sometimes I know for myself, I get so caught up in that, you know, that sometimes though I'll start to, I peek my head out from my little world and it's like, I look over and I was like, wow, I hear so much happening from your end too. So many people getting turned on to your work. It just seems like you guys are in a really good place as far as like momentum right now. And as far as people getting turned on to the message, I just hear more and more about your stuff all the time. So it seems like you guys are really flowing right now, eh?
We are. By the way, likewise, I hear, tons of good stuff about what you do. But yeah, I think that it's a natural momentum that for sure we, you know, I have initiated as early as 2008. But you know, it's like avalanche. It starts right. with a little of snow going down the hill, and then it turns into something more massive. So we're definitely growing. There's a lot of momentum on our side, and we're very happy because, well. Hey, you know, if you're an artist, you want to be published, you want to be heard, you want your music to be heard by a lot of people, you want your book to be read by a lot of people, you want your film to be watched by a lot of people, and when you design a method for people to move naturally, to get stronger and healthier, well, you enjoy seeing that it's benefiting more and more people.
Definitely. Yeah. And there's so many people who've taken on this movement style that have I mean, I guess this is what's so interesting about it compared to, I guess, many other styles of movement that are out there being offered. This seems like one, when people take it on, it starts to influence lots of other aspects of their lives too. So it's really comprehensive, right? It's not just you know, a series of toe touches or something. It's like it starts to become a part of your lifestyle. So it must be awesome to see it impacting so many people. And the other thing that I wanted to say was that I'm guessing, and I don't want to speak for you here, but I can speak for myself. I'm guessing when you started doing this, you know, there was a lot more, I don't want to say resistance, but culture wasn't as prepared. And now we're at this place where it seems like the idea of ancestral health practices seems to have caught on so much that now it's like easy, smooth sailing for people like ourselves who are out there bringing this message, because people are really prepared for it. Have you noticed anything like that?
I have, of course. I think that it looks like a lot of the I would say the players, like some of these thought leaders in that trend, which is, you know, the natural, paleo, primal, rewild trend, have been, you know, somewhat started on their own in their little corner, you know, individually at about the same time. And it looks, it seems that we're gathering and creating all together that, you know, big momentum, kind of a hub that people understand as being something that is interconnected, that is, you know, similar in approach, in methods, of course with differences, but and I think that yeah, we all benefit from each other's momentum. So it's great to see, and obviously it benefits a lot of people.
Yeah, it's also awesome to see. I guess for me, it's really nice to see, like, there's everybody's kind of, I think one of the things that characterizes the leaders, thought leaders in this movement is, like, we tend to be generalists. We want to be Renaissance people. We're not specialists so much. But then we all do kind of have our area of expertise, and it's always nice to see. It's nice to be like, you know, I love movement stuff. I love teaching movement, but it's like, you know, if somebody comes to me and says, hey, where do I start? It's really nice to be able to, like, point to you and say, hey, this guy's got, you know, something a little more dialed in than what I can bring to you. And I wanted to ask you about that because, you know, recently on my social network, one of the things that was happening was, well, something I notice occasionally, it's very few people and it's not that frequent, but every once in a while people will make comments like, oh, it must be nice to be you because your lifestyle is all set up for this and, oh, it must be so easy and it's so hard for me to get, you know, into this stuff. And it's like, sometimes I think people don't realize what it takes to kind of get to that place where not only are you living the lifestyle, but you're really bringing it out there. And
yes.
After spending some time with you, Erwan, one of the things that, like, I was watching your movement, I was kind of trying to, you know, reading your body language, watching how you interacted with the students, and it was like, all right, this isn't a guy who's just developed this out in the gym, you know, going to the gym an hour a day. I could just see this is a guy who lived it, who sweated it, who went through austere living in order to develop this practice out. Now, I was just kind of curious if you'd be willing to share a little bit about what you went through to get to a place where you can bring a message like this out to the world and where you embody it. Because your movements are, the way that your body moves is, it's hard to not notice. I mean, it's like, wow, okay, this guy's really the embodiment of what he's teaching. How'd you get there? Because it wasn't, obviously it wasn't handed to you. And obviously you didn't just, you know, pick this up, you know, with a sort of passe kind of attitude about learning.
Well, absolutely. And well, you know, Daniel, you didn't go to a rewilding university to get a degree or PhD in rewilding, right? You had to do your own research. And it didn't start the moment when people start to know you, you know, like on media and publicly. It started long time before, you know, you own your craft. The same thing happened for me. And yes, you mentioned in the beginning, so a few years ago, starting 2008, 2009, I started to use the term natural movement, and people would open big eyes, including and even more especially in the fitness industry, because they were like, what is that? Are you talking about some form of yoga or something? It was like, I'm talking about the overall practice of all the movement skills that are deeply universally human, and that alone constitutes, in my opinion, one of, if not the most effective approach to developing the body and the mind. In this industry that is so heavily formatted a certain way, people would be like, what am I going to do with that? You know, or even from a business perspective, from these fitness people, what kind of business can I do with that? But then, you know, step by step, you build the momentum, you keep doing what you do, you keep spreading your message, you keep being who you are and faithful to who you are, true to who you are, and eventually people see it. They see that you carry a unique message, and that it's not something that you've chosen to do because you saw a potential opportunity and then maybe you had a business plan and everything, right? No, it is an expression, a pure, true, authentic expression of who you are. It means that success or not, popularity or not, recognition and acknowledgements or not, I would keep doing what I do always because this is who I am. And in these days, in this modern world where there's so much superficiality everywhere, this becomes a rare value. Authenticity. Integrity. Authenticity is integrity. And if you have integrity, then nothing else matters. And if you don't have integrity, then nothing else matters. Mm. And this, to borrow a quote from whoever said that, it's brilliant. It's so true. So, yes, I did have to go through a lot to get there, and including commit to a personal vision of, okay, I choose that I am the person to bring this natural movement practice, philosophy, lifestyle movement to the world at the wider scale I can. And this is me stating this to myself out there one night in nature, in the wind, nobody around, in the woods. And really, there is nothing else but that vision. There's no website. There's no certification. There's no media articles. There's no podcast. There's nothing. Mm-hmm. And then, you have to have that vision. You have to commit to it. And then, of course, you make sacrifices because you have to make choices. But this is also an exercise in freedom, an exercise in creativity, an exercise in envisioning and shaping your own reality and your own destiny. So I did that for myself first, because you have to do something that, again, is an expression of who you are, that really pleases you and energizes you. But the way I've designed it from the start was, how can I create something, a method, a program that people, you know, that is going to make me happy? And of course, also I'll make a living, but that is inherently designed to benefit people. It's something, you know, it's not about like selling whatever product just because there's a market for it and you're going to make bucks. No, it's about, can I design something that is healthy, that is beneficial, that is going to change people's lives? And that's how I started. And then the rest is, of course, a lot of thoughts, a lot of work, a lot of writing, a lot of energy. So you ask me, what did I get through to get there? Well, in terms of my personal preparation, physically, you know, mentally, movement and everything, well, that happened before, years before I decided to even do anything with it, right?
Yeah, that piece I'm really interested in too. Actually, okay, first I want to just say, while you were talking just now, I was getting like goosebumps because I had a really similar, you know, moments in time where I also decided, okay, you know what, I'm going to do this. I'll make the sacrifices. I have to do this. Like, I feel it in me so strong. And again, like you said, no business plan, no idea of even how to run a business, no idea what this was going to look like, but knowing I needed to do it. And, you know, I've had the moments I brought up earlier, sort of, you know, sometimes you get, I'm sure it's you get this similar kind of thing. You know, you probably get 99.9% amazing praise from people saying thank you so much. And then you get that occasional person who says some kind of nasty thing because of some headspace they're in. And sometimes for me, that'll cut really deep. So when somebody says like, oh, you're just doing this for the money or something like that, it's like, are you kidding me? Like, you have any idea, you know, what kind of sacrifices I've made to get to this place and how much I don't even understand making money? It's like, to this day, still trying to figure that piece out. And one thing I've noticed is when you go out and you forge a path, like here you are, you know, you've gone out, this idea of natural movement had fallen away from the world, and you've gone out and you've carved this new path. And what it does is it means that all these people can come in behind you and have so much more. I mean, that we suck up the initial arrows, we forge the initial path, and then lots of people come in and develop these businesses and these practices and these companies all behind us, and much more easily, because the path has already been made. And I feel a kind of a correspondence between us in that way, and that we've both been doing something similar in that way. And then I guess I'm also interested, you said, you know, most of your personal development in this happened beforehand, and that again, because I think what we'll see is a lot of the people who will start the next generation of businesses in this movement and companies and ideas in this movement will be people that didn't necessarily have to go through what we had to go through to learn this stuff in the first place. And I'm super interested in that, everyone, because I imagine that there were many, many years of you learning how to move that were probably a lot of things you would never tell your students to do today that shaped you, right? I mean, I imagine there's stuff you were doing. I mean, just looking at you, I'm going, this guy's done some crazy shit.
Yes, there's a lot of there's a lot of things I've done that I would never ever ask a student to do. But at the same time, if at some point somebody wants to push themselves to, you know, situations or movements and situations that are going to, in fact, challenge your mind more than your body. So, yeah, I remember, for instance, being 7 years old and hanging like 20 feet high from a rail. And I was doing that just because I wanted to see what it felt like and just wanted to feel strong. From a very early age, I had that that thing about finding my inner strength. And then when I was 18, I did exactly the same, but this time hanging at about 100 feet high at the top of a crane. So it means like you hang from your two hands to a metal bar, and the rest of your body is hanging completely in the void, 100 feet, you know, above the ground, or balancing on top of very high scaffoldings while doing breathing exercise at night in the wind, or jumping off a bridge in the river, in the sea, the Seine in Paris at night again, and then holding my breath and swimming another like 25 yards underwater before emerging out. You know, the kind of things that like commando people do, I guess. But you don't have to be, you know, special forces or military to do that, because your intention here is not to become a war machine to destroy people or your enemies or whatever. It's about becoming a life machine or an evolved life, you know, life being that has a deeper sense of what they're made of physically but also mentally. And there are, of course, many other ways you can push yourself or get to know yourself by reaching some limits, and they don't all involve risk and danger, right? So actually, you know, there are many ways you can really become a better person just by, say, listening to your heart. It can be that simple, just by making sure you're not acting out of crazy ego and things like that. And these are important aspects of pushing yourself or evolving personally at a deeper level that do not involve a physical or physical challenge or mental challenge in the sense of danger and stuff. These are things that I've done that, you know, give me the ground and the embodiment for what I teach. And of course, I teach simpler approach, you know, to developing oneself. But ultimately, if people want to push themselves thanks to what they learn with MoveNat, then they can do it on their own.
Yeah, I really felt that. Like one of the things I really liked about the training was that it was like, these things seem to me they would be great if I just wanted to, you know,
live in downtown Manhattan, but they're also great if I really want to tear through the forest. And so I felt like the skills were scalable, and I really appreciated that about it. And I guess as you were talking, what just was coming up for me was I was just thinking a lot about, again, in our ancestry, one of the things that we see is that human beings had trials that they went through, initiations that they went through, and a lot of us didn't grow up in a world, I'll speak for myself, I didn't grow up in a world where there was any initiation for me, where I really had to figure out what I was made of, or who, you know, I had to figure out my own initiations. And so for me, there's a lot of situations I put myself through that were demanding, difficult, dangerous, because I felt like I needed to feel that, I needed to know. And is that kind of like what you were tapping into as well, this sense of the initiations that maybe as a man you needed?
Precisely, and I did it intuitively, and because I did feel that, you know, I wanted to know what it is to know, to want to know what you're made of. Well, it's if nobody ever tells you, okay, you've passed the test and you're a man now, or in some ways, you know, in other ways, you're a woman, you know, you've achieved something or done a form of ceremony that acknowledges you as having, you know, passed the, you know, a certain stage, and so you are fully an adult. You're somebody complete that way. So and everybody else acknowledges your worth. Well, we live in a world where indeed these ancestral rites of passage, you know, almost do not exist any longer, and. You know, just because you say you become graduated does not mean that you feel that you are a man or a woman. You just feel that you're ready for the work market. That's it. Mm-hmm. That's it. And that's not truly deeply satisfying, because the truth is the ancestral natural memory still flows within at a deeper level of our psyche and wants us to go through the same our ancestors went through. So I think that I designed intuitively my own rites of passage, where you have to fear, you have to face your fears, you have to overcome your fear, take risk, and feel vitalized and energized, and it's deeply rewarding, because once you've done that, then you're like, okay, I have an inner strength, and I can carry it. It's part of me, and it's gonna be there for me in any area of life. So, beautiful thing. More people need that.
Yeah, that's what I'm seeing as you're saying that as well. Is and I want to be clear when I say this next piece. This isn't like an ego thing of like, oh, well, Aaron, you and I were such adults, you know. But I do notice, in the same way that I can look at a five-year-old and say, this person's a child still, they're still developing, in that way I look at a lot of what people that are technically and legally adults now, in that they've reached physical maturity, but they haven't reached often emotional, mental, psychic, spiritual maturity. And that's often very palpable in people. Again, not as a ego thing, but as a, wow, this person hasn't been challenged or experienced the challenges that would help them to feel they've actually achieved that adulthood. And so they still kind of have this childlike nature that hasn't fully matured. Whereas, you know, the way that humans used to develop, we would, like you said it a moment ago, someone would at some point say, Erwin, you get your man card. You know, or to a woman, you are now a woman. And nobody ever tells us that. They just say, oh, you can drink now. Or, so, you know, whatever, you can vote now.
But fortunately, today you have the ice bucket challenge. That will make you a real man. And you can even have a t-shirt, you know, I passed the ice bucket challenge. So it's all good. Just do
so
that.
You're good. There you go. You've
made and as a matter of fact, there is a number of, again, of completely unconscious things that people do very unconsciously to get that feeling that they are, complete, that were like they have achieved something, and that can be as stupid as I own a gun, I can shoot a gun, or have a bike, and it's a Harley Davidson, and I feel strong on it. When I ride my bike, I feel free. I'm a real man. All right, cool. Well, the thing is, what we're talking about does not depend on anything external like that. Right. It's not an object. It's right. not a tattoo. It's not a mustache. It's not a big biceps. It's really a state of mind.
Wow. I just want to completely agree with it. The tools, the implements of power don't give you the power. I mean, that's a really crucial piece of it.
And not that, I mean, strong people don't have these things, you know. You know, when you're strong, you can afford anything you want. You can wear a pink t-shirt if you want. You're strong, and you know it, and no matter what people think. And you may have a bike, you may have a gun, you may have a tattoo, you may have anything you want, but that's not where your self-empowerment comes from.
And using those things, for instance, going through the right training with that gun might get you some of that. Training with the bike might get you some of that. Though what you went through to get the biceps might engender some of that. But I think, yeah, we do have a culture that that almost promotes the appearance of the thing over the mindset and the work that went into getting there in the first place. And then to that, I want to ask this question for you. So it sounds like earlier in, it was a lot more about challenging yourself with physical danger. As you've matured as a man, have you found that it's more about now bringing your heart and your mind and your spirit through those kind of initiations rather than so much needing to test yourself physically?
Yeah, absolutely. When you test yourself physically, you're not just testing the body, you're also testing right. your will. So you're testing something that's immaterial, that's your mind, your spirit, your courage, your willpower, things like that. But then this is just a stage, and ultimately you want to seek more wisdom. And personally, I've always been seeking wisdom, and I even thought at some point when I was younger that I had wisdom, and then I realized that I was really foolish to think so, because because today I really start to understand what true wisdom implies, and it really has to do with a really evolved psyche and a heart that's in a really good condition, really open and strong and loving, and I'm working on that. To operate more from the heart and less from the mind. Jessica, my wife, is an amazing teacher that way, and I learned a lot from her. And being the father of three young kids also helps a lot. It creates insane chaos at home, but every moment is an opportunity to, again, operate more from the heart and less from the mind. And it's great. It's phenomenal. And also, I have my shamanic practice and apprenticeship. And ultimately, it has to do. You know, we are spirit energy beings. That's what we are. But when you operate at a lower level of perception or more conventional level of perception, then you're like, what is that guy saying? Doesn't make any sense. But when you have acquired and when you nurture that perception, then again, doesn't matter what people think or say, because you know at what level you operate, and you know in the end everything is energy. And so, but you may understand that from a conceptual or intellectual standpoint. Oh yeah, everything is energy. That's a beautiful thought. It's just a thought. But when you know that everything is energy, then you know that life is the magic practice of energy. And it's not about what you know in your mind. It's really how you apply yourself and how you practice that energy. And everything is energy. Everything impacts it, good or bad. What you eat, obviously, how you move, obviously, and where you are, the air you breathe, the light you receive or don't, the love that you receive or provide and share, everything, absolutely any aspect, any detail of your life, and how you practice it will impact your levels of energy.
Yeah, you've just brought up two things. I want to go into both of them because we're talking a bit about shamanism and the practice of developing this sort of spiritual body. And then you also talked about parenting and you talked about the heart as well. And I want to make sure we give space to both of those because first I want to say, as a guy, you know what I saw as strength growing up was a physical thing. And now that I understand that I'm the strongest when my heart's open, that I'm actually the strongest when my heart is open and vulnerable, when I walk through the world in that way, that I emanate a kind of strength and power that I don't have at the physical level alone. And that took me a long time to integrate that. And I think that's something that a lot of men don't arrive at unless they really go on the journey, you know, into themselves to even come to that. So that piece, I just want to honor you for saying that because I think heart is this piece that our culture just, we talk a lot about it now, but I don't think a lot of people really get what that means and to live from the heart. So I appreciate you saying that. And then I also think that following the heart's what leads us to a lot of these initiation experiences and leads us to the right teachers and leads us to the right information. And you know, what culture's constantly telling us to do is listen to the brain and forget the heart. So I just want to acknowledge that. But then you brought up being a parent to three children, and I see a lot of photos that your partner Jessica posts on Instagram. I think it's at Feather Eagle Sky is her handle there. And so I get to see you with your kids all the time, and it's just awesome to see that. I don't have kids of my own, at least not yet. And watching you raise those kids, I just have been wondering about the life lessons that have come for you out of that. Because again, I get the impression that earlier in your life, you know, it was a lot about, you know, you going through the experiences that kind of made you who you are today. Now, I would imagine that this is a completely radically different lifestyle, having these three beings that you are tending and caring for. How's that been for you?
It's not a completely different lifestyle. It's just it's the same lifestyle with more people in.
All right. Cool.
It just gets really tribal. you know, it's a real family cell, you know, like five people, two parents, three children. Well, what can I say about it? It's just the greatest gift. The greatest gift. It is a lot of work. It's insane the amount of work and energy you have to put in, but you know, you do it joyfully. They are your life, they're your blood, they are, you know, they bring so much love and energy, they show you love. Even if you're interested, even say somebody's interested in Zen, somebody's interested in meditation, you know, self-control and stuff like that. Well, yeah, easy to do in your little temple with the little bell and incense and stuff. And, you know, it's everything is silent. Now you have to multitask, and you have to make sure that the kids are, you know, they're happy. You change their diapers; it's full of poo-poo, and then you have to cook for them, and then you also have to run your business, and then you also have to do this and do that, and yeah, you learn to choose your battle better. You learn to prioritize better, and you know you. It's good to see people who are successful and yeah, they travel the world, they write these books and they do this and do that. Yeah, but these people don't have children. Now you try to be as committed to your own success when you have a family and see how it works. So that is the great challenge, is to be there present for your children. And while also keep on, you know, being effective and successful at what you do before they are here. So, yeah, that's definitely a challenge, but I love it. I really, really love it.
How about from the perspective
So many lessons to be learned. It's unbelievable. And you know, for somebody who loves to learn, it's a great gift. And I wanted to say, when you are alone, when you're single, and especially when you are like that entrepreneur and you create this and create that and do this and do that, but the truth is that you are self-absorbed. Mm-hmm. And that's what Jessica told me early on when she met me. She told me, "You are self-absorbed." I was like, what does that mean? I didn't really understand what it meant, and I did not really agree with it, but now I really understand the meaning of that. It means that, she wasn't in my life yet, so I wasn't in love with her yet. We were not in love together yet. She already had a first child, and then we had two more together. So now there is no way you can be self-absorbed, my friend, right? You really understand that it's not just about you, and you. And it doesn't mean that I was before, you know, selfish or whatever. It doesn't mean that I was not open to the world and other people or anything like that. But just meant that I had nobody else to share what I do with and who I am with. And now I do. And it makes a tremendous difference because I don't think as, you know, or one, just myself. Every time I think of us. And you know, it's great for anybody to think that way because we have become so individualistic.
It sounds like as you're talking, like you're describing another initiation here into a further sort of stage of human development where this isn't hanging off of a crane, but having these children in your life and this partner in your life, it sounds like it causes a kind of maturity that we could really miss out on otherwise. And I say that obviously from the other side of like, yep, I'm pretty self-absorbed. And you know, what do you do? I'm hearing this going like, yeah, it sounds like another layer of the initiation process.
Yeah. In some ways I think it is because, well, I would totally agree that it is important at some point in your life to actually be self-absorbed because that's how you spend a lot of time learning who you are, defining yourself, building yourself, you know, getting stronger, getting healthier, getting wiser, getting more experienced. That's important, right? So not to be seen as an issue, but it is a stage because at some point, you know, you can't just live on your own or I don't think you are truly achieved as a person before you are a parent. And I know that some people will not agree with me, but that's how I think.
And those people who don't agree don't have kids probably.
Probably. And that's that you are a man and a woman. But there's more. You are not necessarily achieved and complete just because you have children. Because anybody can have children and doesn't make you a good parent just because you have children. So it's really about the measure is love and is presence.
All right. Okay. So that kind of segues us because now I really would love to hear about your shamanic practice and, you know, this. That's like another layer out, you know, parenting, of course, like as you're describing, teaching us about caring for others. But then in the shamanic practice, we're talking a lot more about the world, I think, as an extended family. We're talking about the oneness between all of us. We're talking about learning to walk with an open heart, with an intuition that we listen to, with an integrity, with a cleanness in how we interact with others, with our integrity and all of that. So I'd love to hear about like how that shaped you, how you got into that and where that's leading you.
Where is that leading me? It's the same direction that I've always chosen, the same path. I've always wanted, you know, inner strength, health, freedom, wisdom. I've always wanted to acquire these things. I've always wanted to be You know, you hear a lot about biohacking and stuff like that, optimizing your own life, and you know, taking food for the brain and things like that. It's great. I love that movement. But if you don't do plant medicine, and by plant medicine, I'm talking about entheogens. I'm talking about mind psyche altering plants, psychedelics. Then you have no clue whatsoever what you're talking about. You're a child. You're a total amateur. When you hear people say, "Oh, I'm paleo," okay, you're paleo. Have you ever done a plant medicine? Oh no, I just mostly eat bacon. Okay, well then you have no idea whatsoever what you're talking about, because if you were living like our ancestors lived, then you would already have had tons of plant medicine experiments or experiences, because it was part of our. You look at any hunter-gatherer tribe still existing, and they all do it. It's part of the human experience. It actually makes the human brain, the human evolutionary psychology, and today it's been vilified and made evil, because supposedly it destroys your brain and you're gonna become a bomb and somebody useless to society. But this is complete bullshit, and this is just a reflection of people's fear and ignorance, because everybody, all these current generations of people, have been cut off their memory, their traditions, their culture, cut off completely by civilization, by brainwashing, by institutions, by conventions, by religions, by all of that. And they don't understand. They don't see it. But the plant tells you, the plant shows you everything you need to learn. It tells you, it gives you all the insights that you need to learn to fix yourself, to heal yourself, to improve yourself. It's not about having some form of silly and hallucinations. That's not what it is. It's about having a profound experience of who you are, truly, what the world is, how it works, how spirit works, how energy works, so that you can modify, change your perception, but not just change your perception, but change your behaviors, so that you can practice yourself better on a daily basis. And that may be an insight that you have to quit smoking, that you have to quit drinking Coca-Cola, that you have to eat better, that you have to move more, that you have to love yourself more, that you have to love on your body, that you have to take more time, that you have to sleep more, that you have to, anything that your conscious mind want to avoid talking about and acknowledge, mm-hmm. but that your psyche at a deep level knows you have to do if you're going to be better, feel better, maybe avoid a freaking cancer, or just avoid being depressed, or being sad, or being frustrated, or being disoriented in your life, right? So this is not anybody telling you, preaching to you, you know, who you should serve, what you should do, whatever, what medication you should take. This is your own spirit telling you, and this the spirit of the plant telling you, okay, here's my friend, here's what you need to see, here's how you need to feel about this or that, and this is what you need to do. Now you be free. Now you do it or not, it's whatever you want to do, but if you want the truth, if you want the insights, if you want to be better, feel that way, think that way, and behave that way. Now you go and you do the work. That's what plant medicine is.
Wow, and it's so true. And earlier in the conversation, you had said, and I didn't want to bring it up then because I didn't know if this was a conversation you'd want to have about entheogens, but you said before about the difference between...
Oh my God, Daniel, no, I didn't want... You forced me to do...
I just twisted your wrist to talk about it.
I mean, it's not commercially correct. Do you understand how many clients I may lose, how much business and money I may lose? You know,
police might be on their way to your house right now.
Oh my God.
You said earlier everything is energy, but most people, that's an intellectual idea. These experiences you're talking about make that so real and so palpable. I mean, there's no denying it. Once you've had that experience, there's no going back to the intellectualization of these ideas. It's like And the challenge, I think, for a lot of people who don't do these medicines is you listen to somebody try to describe their experience, and it can sound like some hippy-dippy kind of stuff, like, oh, I saw that we're all one. Oh, I felt that everything's energy. Until you have that experience, it's very difficult to describe how realer than real these encounters with yourself and with the plant can be. But it almost feels to me like your brain can't form properly if it doesn't get this kind of these kind of neurotransmitters. And I do want to nod a little bit to the people who say, hey, you know, I know a lot of people say, hey, I think you can get there through natural means. Well, I would say, hey, these are natural means. That's like saying that, you know, oh, I'll get my vitamin C naturally. I don't need it from plants. I mean, that's just ridiculous. Nobody argues that it's not natural to get your vitamin C from plants.
Exactly. It's like when you take a herbal tea, or you take a herbal tea because, and you say you take a chamomile because it's going to relax your mind. Well, my friend, you're already taking plant medicine.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Right? So, oh, I'm eating broccoli because I've heard there's good minerals in it. Yeah, whatever. Or dandelion because there are more antioxidants in it. Like, good. All right. Well, there are also plenty of other stuff that, you know, yep. There's the spirit of the plant in it that you're taking, and it's altering you at a very subtle level, but you don't even see because, you know, mm-hmm. There's too much shit in your psyche. This truth is that you can feel it. You cannot feel it because your whole mind has been cluttered for years by TV shows, by video games, by Facebook, by this and that and that and that. How can you ever be open and feel and be sensible or sensitive to... It's like if you look at a forest and it just... wood, just a bunch of trees to you. You don't see the life in it. You don't feel the energy. You don't feel their dialogue. You don't smell the essences. You don't feel, you know, it's whenever you learn to read something, anything. Reading is not just reading a book. It's not just reading a text. Say you're a kayaker. You're an expert at kayak. You read the water. You read the currents. Mm-hmm. If you're a sailor, you read the wind, you read the waves, you read the currents, you read the sea and the ocean. If you're a rock climber, you read the routes, you read the rock. Right? So a blind person reads a lot through their touch. And, you know, somebody who has a very, very fine sense of smell will smell many things that others won't. So it's really about your senses and your attention and training them to be alert and more sensitive at a higher level.
Yeah, not only to what's happening, because I find that entheogens have sensitized me to other people's energy. They've sensitized me to my own heart. They've sensitized me to my own intuition. And then something that I think doesn't get talked about enough, and I'm curious your input on this, a lot of what I'm able to teach in the world and share about rewilding and about domestication, I learned through the entheogenic process. You know, these plants taught me things, and I think this is happening in a lot of fields. I think a lot of people who are subject matter experts have had a lot of experiences like this that have shaped the things that they teach, but we don't always talk about it because there's this prohibition about it. So I'm curious, how have you found that your encounters with entheogenic plants have deepened your own craft in the sense of your ability to sense proprioceptively your own movement? Because I've certainly found that plant medicine has allowed me to move and connect to feeling and sensation in my body that I was well beyond what I was ever experiencing in my normal waking state.
To be honest, not really. But I may be more more attentive or intuitive to sensations in my body as I move.
Based on your own graph.
Lots of energy and all. And I would also, I somewhat, you know, early on, you know, come from a school of, not walk or die, but somewhat just, you know, endure and suck it up and just, you know, go beyond the pain and stuff like that. So when the problem is that when you think that way, then you're not paying as much attention to your body as you could or should. But, you know, it builds character and it builds, you know, it is important to learn to suck it up, like to be strong. And that's something that you do learn a lot through through physical ordeals, you know, having to run whatever 50 miles and having to crawl in the mud, having to stay in the cold water, having to do something that you fear and things like that. Okay. So it's very important. But as you age, also, you know, I'm almost 44, and I do since, and I mean, my body is still like in amazing shape and can move very well. And but I am paying much more attention to my body. I'm much more thankful to my body and like loving on my body that I used to. That's something again that also that I've learned thanks to the plants. To rub my body, to love on my body, to be thankful for it, to be attentive that, you know, I'm not pushing it too much, or sometimes when it's not necessary, or when my body tells me no, not today, or not that way, or not that much, which is a form of self wisdom, if I may say.
Yeah, you've put in the time sucking it up. It's like, okay, you got that lesson. Here's some new lessons. And
yeah, exactly. You know, what's the point of, like, you want to nurture yourself, not torture yourself.
Yeah, that's one of the things I see in a lot of the, I guess, the kind of commando type dudes that I know, or the even a lot of the CrossFitter type people I know, where it's like, I want to see sometimes people grow past that, because it's like, hey, you got that part. When they're trying to do that again and again, it's like you're doing the same. You need, there's another level. Like, you don't have to do that anymore. You got that piece. And I would say, exactly, when you were talking about the character that gets developed in cold water, in endurance, in all these different practices that challenge us, because it gets uncomfortable and we want to quit, but we go through and we become stronger. My experience in a lot of the ceremony that I've had with plant medicine is like the same thing, but on the psychic level, on the mental level, on the emotional level, where there is stuff happening that, you know, you just kind of sometimes want to run away from it. It's scary to look deep into your fears about death, your fears about, you know, intimacy, your connections to the universe, your belief about creation, all this stuff. We spend most of our waking day avoiding ever looking really deep at these things, and these medicines bring you to terms with them. And sitting, you know, I'll say to anybody listening, you sit through an 8-hour ayahuasca ceremony without falling back onto your, you know, like without laying down, that's kind of like doing an Ironman event. It's like not easy. You kind of want to bail sometimes. And learning to stay present in those ceremonies is like a kind of endurance athleticism, but for the spirit. At least that's been my experience. And I'm kind of curious your thoughts on that, because, man, these things, especially in the beginning when there's a lot of murky stuff in the psyche, I believe that each ceremony cleanses us at a deeper level and we become more spiritually clear. But early in, especially, there's a lot of weird stuff that we go through. Did you experience that?
Twice, but that's very minimal in relation to how many ceremonies I've done. I know what you're talking about, but I've had these issues mostly in relation to, so I lost my dad recently, so it had to do mostly with that. But otherwise, no. Jessica is absolutely amazingly clear, and I am very, very clear too. And that means singing Icaros all night. Icaros being the shamanic, you know, chants, you know, chanting that that invokes some spirit, some. Well, for people who are not familiar with it, so. But what you see indeed is a lot of people, they just crash. They sleep, or they kind of are in a state of sleep or some form of tremens, and they are puking, and they are like really dealing with a lot of stuff. But that's only because they haven't done the work. Because if you know the word already at a conscious level, it does help a lot. So if you are very, very, or as clear as possible at a conscious level already, then when you do ceremony, it's a breeze. I've seen people starting to do ceremonies and they're navigating through that very, very well. But that's usually, that's rare. Usually people just have indeed a very hard time in the beginning because it points at it, the plant points right there where it's most needed. And that can be, deep sadness because of a relationship, because of parents, because of this or that happened, because of lack of self-love, because of have not been loved, because of whatever it is in your psyche that has not been really or fully dealt with. And the thing is that you may keep operating at a conscious level, you know, you're still functional, you go to work and you do this and you do that and you socialize with people and all, but deep inside of you, even when you don't think of it, the psychological issues, they're altering your energy. They create energy blocks and it's heavy. And what the ceremonies will allow you to do is, even though it may be difficult, you may cry, you may have fears, you may have really a hard time, but in the end, you feel extremely relieved. Mm-hmm. Because it does unlock some of these mental, these energy blocks that you have in your psyche.
Yeah, it's for me, the experience many times, especially again early in when I was clearing a lot of that stuff from my own psyche, it was like each time it was like being renewed or born again or being remade and having a almost like a fresh start in life, which is like a really beautiful, I guess, you know what, because we see that in a lot of religious traditions, like the idea of a redemption, and it's a really redeeming experience for a lot of people. Although, like you said, there's sometimes a tumultuous couple of, you know, a bit through the path that we got to go, but I guess also what I'm hearing is we're talking about this, you know, there's all this stuff about movement and there's all this stuff about food and diet and, you know, all these important pieces, and they are important. And I guess I just want the listeners to hear this idea, like, don't get stuck in that stuff. That's the beginning. Like in the beginning, yeah, you got to clean up your diet, learn how to move again. You know, all these things are really, really crucial, but you know, they don't bring us to complete maturity. There's these other layers that are really important.
It's the beginner level. All right.
Yeah, exactly.
You start to, I have to exercise. Okay, great. It's great. It's not too late. You're in your 40s and you finally realize that you need to exercise, that you need to eat clean. Great. All right, you're really totally a beginner. You've been busy your whole life thinking of your career, making, you know, paying the bills and just enjoying the show, you know, watching stuff, entertaining yourself. And then you're like, oh my God, you know, should I take care of my body a little more? You know, I'm aging and stuff like that. You know, it's never too late to come to realizations about that. But really, really, that's the beginner level. Because ultimately, you can't just put everything in a compartment. So, and the big problem with most people in today's society is that, and that's, you know, that's what I call the humans. They're all fragmented. Mm-hmm. So they see diet as a little compartment. They see exercise as a little compartment, you know. So there's the little case, the little, so they're going to exercise in a certain place at a certain time. And they're going to change, maybe they're going to add supplements. They're not going to change the bulk of their food, which is junk, but they're going to add some supplements. And supplements are great, fantastic, important, but not so much if you don't change the bulk of your diet, your nutrition, what you eat. So, but these are just the basic levels of self-empowerment and health. Physical, mental, spiritual, and I mean, it's already. I want to say, re-encourage people, not give them hard time. Re-encourage people, commend them for making such changes. That is already very, very hard to commit to. To just say, stop drinking soda or quit smoking. It's already showing a lot of courage when your background, where you come from, is a place of toxicity, of lifestyle toxicity. But not to discourage anybody, but there's so much more to do.
Especially if we're going to have elders again on this planet, because I feel like we're in this world where we have these olders, but we don't have elders because there's so few people in our environment who've gone through these sequential stages of development to the end. And so I think it's really important that we do this. Like we were talking before about this generation of children who are growing up to parents like yourself and Jessica who have gone through a lot of this. They're gonna benefit from having truly matured parents. And we need to do this for ourselves, for our own spiritual development, but we also need to be there for the children because a lot of us know what it's like to have parents and grandparents who were still like aged children because they hadn't gone through all these kind of layers of initiation we're talking about. And I guess that brings me back to sort of the beginning of our conversation, which is saying when I came out to work with you, it was apparent to me really obvious, okay, this dude I'm dealing with is teaching movement, but from a place, a shamanic place. So that it wasn't just movement. The movement was the vehicle or the vessel through which you were communicating something a lot deeper. And I think that's why I felt such a kinship with you then, was like, okay, I know where this guy's coming from. He's coming from a place of spiritual maturity, not just physical maturity. And that's not that common in the movement world, as you know. So,
well, you know, that's where you wanna start. You need an entry point. And if that entry point is movement or nutrition, you know, or some aspect of lifestyle, then it's great because you have people engaged in, you know, a change in nutrition or change in movement practice can be enormously beneficial in no time. And that is great because it gives people the confirmation that yes, they were right daring that change in their life. And if that And if that change worked, and it made me feel better, look better, perform better, you know, it basically changes their energy levels, then what else can I do that's effective, that's going to work, that's going to make me feel and look and perform even better? And then ultimately you want to approach not just lifestyle, but who you are in a way that's global, that's really holistic, as we say, as opposed to compartmentalized and fragmented.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
It's the practice of your energy, of who you are as an energy being at every level. And then when you see like that, then everything matters. Where you live, the kind of house or apartment where you live, the air you breathe, again, do you have plants around you or nature around you? The people you hang out with, are they elevating your energy? Are they uplifting you, or are they trying to, pull you down? Things like that. Everything, you will see it through the lens of energy levels and energy practice.
I completely agree. For people who are... people who want to come work with you, you know, we talked a little bit before the show about some event you have coming up in LA soon, and I know, you know, you're traveling around teaching as well. How do people get involved if they want to come work with you, or if they want to come work with some of your teachers?
So the exciting upcoming event that we have lined up is the participation to the ID show. It's IDEA. It's in LA. And it's basically a fitness show. So you may wonder, what on earth is Erwan and Movnat are going to do there? Well, it's very simple. We're not going to transform the industry by isolating ourselves in a corner of the woods. We're going to step up, which is already what we've been doing for since we started, but we're going to be there right there like a Trojan horse. It's like, look at this horse, beautiful sculptor, huh? Okay, now we're going to get out of here and we're going to take over. Because there's enough pollution in that whole fitness industry, and that's enough. Bulk of the, and I'm not afraid to say it, and I don't care if it's controversial in politically or politically incorrect, and that people will hate me for saying this, but the bulk of the fitness industry is a fraud. It's bullshit. It's not what people need. It has nothing to do with our human nature. We are able of much more than this. We're capable of much more power, much more grace, much more freedom in movement than just taking care of, like, you know, toning up the butt, biceps, and whatever. Like, seriously, that's all there is to it? It's that shallow? We need to re-empower human nature, to rewild it. That's what we need. And it's important to be there, right there, where it happens. So that fitness show, what we're going to show, in fact, not only our method, our programs, our movements, our techniques, but we're going to show a new kind of equipment that we import from Europe. That's a modular system. So basically, it's about recreating some of the natural environments and demands that we normally find in nature, but to recreate them indoors within a control environment. Because the truth is that you can't just take people out in the woods and expect them to thrive there right away. First off, most people, you find them in city with not an easy access to nature. And then when it comes to coaching techniques and movement efficiency, it's really a lot about scalability, progression, safety, and variety within a relatively restricted environment. So we want to think of all the people who live in cities, especially in the winter when, you know, it's all muddy, wet, too cold, covered with snow. How do people, you know, get out there and just go in nature and learn to move? Well, no, you want to provide solutions that are more accessible and that adapt to where you find people, as opposed to, you know, asking the opposite, which would be, you know, forcing people to adapt to levels of practice or conditions that they're not ready for physically or mentally.
That I gotta say, is a piece that comes with maturity too as a teacher, because I know for me when I started out, it's like always trying to push myself and everyone else to do things that now I understand. There are people who want to do it that way. There are people who are going to train in the snow barefoot in the middle of the winter, but they represent such a small fraction. We can't change the world effectively that way. And I think as teachers, when we start to mature, it's like, you know, I have a teacher that always tells me, a martial arts teacher, you got to take it to the soccer moms, Daniel. That's what he always kept telling me. You've got to take, it's not going to change the world till you can make this accessible to soccer moms. And at first that used to annoy me to no end. And now it's like, yeah, I so get it. It's like, we got to make this accessible to people. And then I love the idea of modular systems, because our homes tend to be so static. And right. I really think that the future, where there's going to be a big movement towards creating habitat within our homes. And so I love the idea of a system that you could bring into your life that is modular. I think that's going to be really, really crucial moving forward. So that sounds really cool.
Right. And it's really about adaptability. We talk about at MoveNow, we talk a lot about adaptability of movement, but it's also the adaptability of the method and the approach itself. Again, if you want to be uncompromising, and to be uncompromising has its place in certain circumstances, but sometimes you have to be compromising. Because indeed, if you tell people, hey, MoveNow is only in the woods and it's just like take it or leave it, you know, there's a tree, climb it. If you can, then just quit, you know. That's not going to appeal to many people. So the point is, provide a solution that is accessible, non-intimidating, that is affordable, that is scalable, that is progressive and safe. Provide that to a majority of people. So basically, bring nature in, so then people can acquire their self-confidence and movement skills and techniques and physical competency, and then inspire them to take it back to where it belongs, to where they belong, which is in nature. So then the loop, we create that loop, and it's a virtual cycle of, you know, adapting nature to be indoors and then adapting what you do indoors to nature.
Man, we're like on the same page, and I got to tell you that I get a lot of strength knowing you're in the world doing the work you're doing, because it's like, It's just so, you know, like we talked about it before, earlier in, I felt like I was the only person out there doing it. And then it's like, oh, I start to realize, nope, there's a lot of us doing this work and we're doing it together. And it feels really good to know that.
Exactly. We have a lot of friends out there, working hard, bringing that message, bringing that experience to a greater number of people. And then you also have, of course, all the people who do it, who participate, who are re-empowering themselves, their nature, rewilding themselves. It's a beautiful thing to see. So no, we're not alone, and we're made of others. Mm-hmm. And it makes our strength, and the momentum is building. So it's a beautiful thing to see.
Yeah, it's happening. Hey, if you've been listening to this, we're going to provide links to Erwan's website, to his schedule, to the show he's talking about coming up in LA, and to the events that he's going to be having in Santa Monica on the 21st and 22nd. So I want you to check those out. And I really want to encourage you, as a MoveNat certified trainer, I'd really encourage you to get out for a MoveNat workshop and or consider doing their certification if fitness is a sort of arena that you're in, because this is some really amazing stuff, and it's certainly benefited me a lot. Erwan, man, thank you so much for coming on. Thank you for your vulnerability today and sharing so much. I think that it's going to mean a lot to people to be able to hear all of this, because it's nice sometimes when we kind of really share what's going on internally for us, that people know kind of, hey, it's not just them, but we're all kind of we're all going through the same kind of stuff together. So I just really commend you for sharing your heart with us today.
Well, absolutely. You're welcome. Thank you so much for having me on your show again. And thanks, everybody, for listening.
Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to the show. If you enjoyed it, please subscribe to the show on iTunes. And if you would, leave a rating and a review. That's really going to help us get this message out to more people. And it's going to help us know what you really like and what you don't like, and help us really tailor this show to your needs and to what you want to hear. Please stay connected with me at DanielVitalis.com and sign up for my newsletter and my magazine, Rewild Yourself. And you can subscribe to both of those right there on DanielVitalis.com. Got lots of really great shows lined up, and I'm going to keep bringing you more great information. And until then, keep rewilding yourself.